Good morning and welcome to another episode of Breakfast Theology. Today, it's just Chuck and I.
Breakfast Theology light.
Yeah, I suppose so. My name is Josiah Kane, and as I said, Chuck Jones is here with me. Isaac was planning on joining us this morning, but remembered that he had a last minute meeting, so he'll be with us next time, hopefully.
Yeah.
As things start to come towards the summer, stuff gets complicated. It's supposed to be a time of relaxation and time off work and vacations, but...
No.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I used to think, oh, summers are going to be awesome when I'm an adult. I can do whatever I want to. And I realized I had to work all summer. I was like, what? I think everybody should get a mandatory 3 months off of life like you do in school. Although it would make it hard for the world to operate.
Teachers do.
Yep. That is one of the big benefits of being a teacher. So today, we are going to talk about a new topic recommended by Dan Kane. He wanted to know about how to get more volunteers involved, and that was one of his ideas that he sent along to us. So thanks, Dan, for communicating some ideas. And we'll kind of touch on that a little bit. Unless you are a pastor or in leadership, your actual job for... let me say it this way. Depending on your position in the church and what you do, how you encourage people to be involved differs quite a bit. So the advice for Dan in his job as a pastor is going to be different than, you know, the Sunday school teacher or an elder or a deacon or something along those lines. So we're going to have to take it a little more broadly and kind of look at it from the biblical eschatological big view, so that we can cover multiple aspects of it.
Yeah.
I think one place we should start is talking about spiritual gifts. Because with spiritual gifts comes how you serve. I mean, that's what it really comes down to, I think, is a good place to always start. So Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, starts to lay out the structure of church. So he says in verse 4, "Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit, and there are varieties of ministries, and the same Lord. There are varieties of effects, but the same God who works all things in all persons. But each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. The one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, and to another the word of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, and to another gifts of healing by one Spirit, and to another the effecting of miracles, and to another prophecy, and to another distinguishing of spirits, and to another variety of tongues, and to another the interpretation of tongues. But one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually just as he wills." And I'm not quite done yet.
No, okay.
Verse 12 here. "For even as the body is one, and yet there are many members, and all the members of the body, though there are many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, we are all made to drink of one Spirit." So I'm going to kind of look at this verse passage right here in reverse a little bit.
Okay.
So I like how Paul ends by saying, "For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body." So whether we're Jew or Greeks, slave or free, we are all made to drink of one Spirit. So we're all taking in the Spirit. We're all anointed by it. We're all empowered by it. Which gets away from the initial distinction for anybody in the church that there are certain people who serve and there are certain people who don't. So we may serve in a variety of different ways, as Paul says, based on the gifting of the Spirit. but we're all meant to be involved.
Correct.
So it's not like the wealthy people or the really smart people or the people who have been there longer. There is no distinction, right? We're not separated by class or by people because we're all made to drink of one spirit. Therefore, we all serve through that spirit for the betterment of the body.
That's the key.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first place you need to communicate that. If you're a pastor, that's what you need to communicate. If you are on a leadership team, that's what you need to understand, is that you may look at some people and they may have obvious strengths, but there might be people you're just glancing over and you're not even thinking about how do they serve, what do they contribute, because they may be underutilized. And it's your job as leadership to recognize who they are, what they're doing, and then maybe try to see what kind of gift, spiritual gift, have they been given. What do you think God has anointed them to do? If you're a weekly attender, someone who maybe is not like in a pastor position, or you're not an elder or something like that, you may be thinking, well, what job do I have in this? You know, what portion do I have? Well, you are one of these people that Paul is talking about. And so it's also on you and your responsibility to be prayerfully considering what you need to do. And if you just show up to church on Sunday and then you walk out the doors an hour and a half later, you're not contributing anything. You're just being a bystander or someone who's coming just to be fed, so to speak.
Yeah. I think, it's my opinion and been my experience, that if God gives you an idea of something that needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
should be accomplished in the church, that he will give you the wherewithal to do that.
Yeah, and not maybe that you have to tackle it all yourself, but that you're probably the initiator, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to maybe pull more people on board eventually or something like that. But yeah, I think God inspires us to do things. It's like Paul when he was traveling around Asia. How did he know where to go? Well, he would try something and then, or have plans to go somewhere or something like that, and then the Spirit would prevent him, it says. You know, like there'd be some kind of clear indication, either within himself, his consciousness, his conscience, or something like that, that can steer him away from where he was going, and then doors would open up that would lead him to certain places.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this topic of gifts and being involved? Maybe what experience have you had as a pastor in your life trying to get people involved in that kind of stuff?
Well, it had been my practice to, you know, pray over the people.
Mm-hmm.
You got a directory or a list or something,
right?
Pray over them. Like you said, you don't want to overlook anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to pray. God knows them. Mm-hmm. And he's on your side. He won't hold it back. If you see somebody that you think might be suitable for a particular job or office, it was my practice to call people into the office.
Mm-hmm. Did they feel like they were in trouble?
I feel yes, like
I
they
have,
did.
As a pastor, I feel like I always have to preface that. When I'm like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? I always say, you're not in trouble. Like, don't worry. It's not anything bad.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And encourage him to look at this particular job or office,
mm-hmm.
and get back to me about what they think.
Mm-hmm.
I had one individual that I thought would make a pretty good elder,
mm-hmm.
and I talked to him about it. And when we got back together, he said, "No, I don't think so."
Hmm.
So I had to find out why. Why do you think you wouldn't fit? So he shared with me some things in his past that if they were in his future, I would have never asked him. Mm-hmm. Or in his present. So we had to go over what forgiveness and cleansing meant, and what experience meant. Mm-hmm. And it did take a little bit of coaxing, but he did take the job.
How did he do?
Did fine.
Yeah.
He did fine.
Yeah, so as far as leadership goes, actually, no, not just as far as leadership. As far as being a member of the family goes, the church family, it is your job to look into people's lives. And I feel like you have permission to be a little nosy in the sense of, not for gossip and not for just for your own pleasure, but and for the purpose of edifying another person. Let's say, first of all, I think it should be everybody's job to keep your eye out on each other. Yeah. So just observe them, listen to what they say, talk to them, and that means you have to be involved in their life in at least some capacity. But I think it's all of our jobs to keep a lookout at the other people in our church and recognize what they're doing, because you may stumble upon a time when you hear them say something and you're like, you know, that was really clarifying and like well put. Maybe you should be a teacher. Or, you know, like someone was talking to them and you heard them give really good advice or something. Thank you. You heard them give really good advice and it was like really wise and discerning. You're like, maybe, you know, you should be involved on the counseling team, or, you know, maybe I can direct some people to come talk to you, you know, something like that. So if you are recognizing something in someone, they may be a really good singer, you'll be on the worship team, or they give good advice, or you think they could be a good teacher, or maybe they could step out and serve in some kind of ministry, or maybe the new ministry has to be created for them, but you should encourage that person, but then also tell someone who is in leadership, like an elder or a pastor or something, say, hey, I think I really see this in that person.
Yeah.
And you should encourage them and at least think about it. You know, maybe you should come and ask that person too what they might want to do. And if you're in a leadership position, hopefully you're having those kinds of conversations on a normal basis with people in your church. Almost every single time in our elders meetings at North Kent, we talk about people in the church, not in a gossipy kind of bad way, but like, hey, how are they doing? What do we think about them? You know,
should we let them keep coming?
Yeah. Should we revoke their Christian card? No. Not at all. Thanks.
Love you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You too.
Thanks.
So yeah, we're always trying to think about who's getting involved where and at what time. Because if our ministry needs is going to keep moving forward, we need to keep getting more people involved. And as people age and they move on in different like chapters of life, and as their interests change, the church shifts. You know, some people have a job in the church that stays the same forever, you know, but some people, you know, as you get older and your life changes, or you go to school, something, you learn something new, you have a different experience. The church can move. It's fluid. It can shift. So it's always important to keep tabs on who's doing what and make sure people aren't getting burned out. Make sure they don't have a new opportunity available to them. Maybe you're seeing a new spiritual gift being developed in them. So it's just important to always be keeping tabs, I think. So what do you think are some practical steps for someone who wants to be involved in a new way at a church, or maybe they don't know how to ask? Or
well, the first thing I would do is go talk to the pastor. Mm-hmm. When you got this thing bouncing around in your head and you're getting more excited about it, and you need to talk to somebody about it.
Right.
You could talk to your family, yep. and get discouraged.
Yeah, that's true.
Or talk to the pastor, who should have a pretty firm grasp on the condition of the church,
mm-hmm.
what's needed.
Yep.
Now, I know that there are some pastors who feel threatened when people come up with good ideas.
Yeah, maybe a small
one. You know.
Okay.
They just, you know, don't think that's good. I don't know. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're afraid it may take something away from them.
Right.
But as a pastor, I was always under the impression that if God wants you to have something, nobody can take it away.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty good point.
And if God doesn't want you to have something, there ain't no way you're going to keep it.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that, as far as volunteerism in the church goes, sometimes people get really possessive of ministry. You know, they're like, well, if I don't keep doing what the ministry I've been doing for the last 20 years, what am I going to do here? And to that I say, it should be almost all of our jobs to work ourselves out of jobs.
Yep.
Our goal is to replace ourselves, to strengthen and encourage other people, because at the end of the day, if the body's going to be growing, that's what's going to have to happen. Old cells in the body have to be replaced by new cells, and they multiply and they grow. So it's like when you're a baby, your bones are really small, but those cells divide and they get bigger. Do you think the other cells complain that there are more cells around doing the same kind of job? No. They were strengthened by the increase in numbers, right? But we get territorial and we try to box people out sometimes, and we say, well, this is how I always do it. This is how it's done. This is why. And this is my ministry. Here's the boundaries. You can walk around those boundaries, and or if I ask you to come in the box for a little bit, you can, but this is mine.
Yeah.
And that's something we need to try to deflate in the church a lot, is we are all moving together. So we're gonna run into each other at times, and we're also gonna work together to get things done.
How is your little personal ministry strengthening the body?
Right. That's a good question to always reflect on, too.
Yep.
Is what I'm doing beneficial? And you might not have a total grasp on that, so talk to other people about it, too. It's good to gain another perspective. Yep. For sure.
And ask somebody that doesn't necessarily like you.
Yep. It's always good to get some critique. Loving critique, which hopefully everybody in the church is loving it towards you. If not, that's a whole other issue we can talk about another time.
You know, it's the problem of just surrounding yourself with people who will agree with you,
mm-hmm.
pat you on the back.
Yep.
Well, that's not good.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That story of Jesus healing that widow's son when he was in the casket.
Yeah, they're on the way out in the funeral procession. He stops them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I can't remember how I pronounced that word, but it was wrong.
Okay.
His beer?
I'm not sure, yeah.
Casket?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, I was using the King James at the time.
Okay.
Because this was a long time ago.
Before the Latin translation came out? No, I'm just joking.
I don't know what I called it, but it wasn't right. And a saintly lady from the church came up to me later and said, "That's called a beer." Beer? I didn't know you used that word.
Buried in beer, what?
But, you know, it's the thing, those are the kinds of things that help us.
I also think a lot of responsibility about recruiting volunteers and getting people involved comes down to leadership, and I think that's, it's always going to, is the pastor and the elders, and 1 Timothy 5:17 says, the elders who direct the affairs of the church. You know, it goes on to say they should be held in double honor.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially those who are preaching and teaching all that. But just that little part where it says the elders direct the affairs of the church, or they rule well. You know, it's about this appointed position and appointing others. And so it really comes down to an encouraging, steady voice. It means a lot when someone believes in you. We are at North Kent. We're trying to plan out the next year of Sunday school. And I've asked a lot of people who are not normally teachers to kind of step out of their comfort zone and try it. You know, and, you know, it might not be for them down the road. They might not want to do it again. But I at least wanted to give them the opportunity and say, hey, you've been here for a long time. You've been a Christian for a long time. You know things. You have life experience. You have your own perspective. You have something that's really passionate to you. Why don't you communicate that to other people and enrich their lives? Look at it as an opportunity to, one, yourself grow, because I think that's the best way to learn is to teach. And then also, who knows, maybe this is something that you're gifted at. You know, like, this is something that you could use your time and your resources to embetter the body and to help others. And that was pretty well received. There were a lot of people who were hesitant at first. And, you know, some of them still have some reservations about it, and they're a little worried.
Yeah.
But I said, my job is to make sure that you are supported, you know, through that. So I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you teach, put together lessons. I can cover for you for a week if you're gone, you know. And I think that's what the elders and the pastor should do, is that they should offer opportunities and talk to specific people and then offer full support. In fact, most oftentimes it's more work for you to get someone new involved and to get them going than it is for you to just do it yourself. But in the long run, the compounding effects of adding more people with more responsibility and skill set makes the church way more successful than a pastor trying to run everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of churches fall short, is why they're stunted, is that the pastor tries to do everything and the leadership tries to handle all the details themselves. It's a church of 60 ran by 5, you know?
Yeah.
But it should be a church of 60 ran by 60. And even the kids get involved, you know? It's not like you have to be an adult or, you know, went to Bible college. You can be a teenager. You can be a little kid. I mean, even Tommy at church, you know, he brings a certain amount of life and energy. And Sarah and Brittany and Alyssa and Ellie, they're kind and sweet, and they play and they have friends that they invite. You know, they all have their roles to play.
Yeah.
So I think it's just about encouragement, observation, and support. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yes.
And knowing that is actually God who's doing all the work and tying it together. So all of that should be done in prayer.
Solomon said that you should know the state of your flock.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Isn't that the point of a shepherd, is to direct the flock, to lead them to pastures, to make sure they're taken care of, to keep them away from danger, to
protect them. Yep. Yeah.
Sometimes a sheep needs to be sheared, you know. Sometimes they need their hose taken care of. Sometimes they can become leaders of their own. Just like every pastor is an under-shepherd of Christ, you know. We step up to the plate when opportunities present themselves, I think. So create opportunities and offer them. And don't be afraid to fail. I think that's a big part,
no,
too.
No, that's the thing. Don't be afraid. One Sunday night when we had Sunday evening services a long time ago.
Yeah.
I had...
Thank you.
You're welcome. I had it all planned out. I mean, it wasn't spur of the moment or anything, but we sang our songs and gave the announcements, and I got up to preach, and I started... And it just wasn't coming across, like, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night was attended by about a third of the Sunday morning. I'm standing there and looking at the people as I'm talking, and what I'm saying ain't getting in. If I just stopped the whole thing, I apologized. Stopped the whole thing. Sang a couple more songs and went home. You know, my part in the show wasn't that important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great example of trying something, you know, putting yourself out there and then failing. I think a lot of times what it comes down to with churches is money, usually. You know, they're like, well, if we do this and we invest money, what if it doesn't work? You know, then we're out all that money and we could have put it somewhere else. True. But as you said, if God wants you to do something, if you feel like you're drawn towards a specific ministry, it doesn't matter if you have the money right now. It doesn't matter. God's going to make a way for it to happen.
Yep.
And that is a part of stepping out in faith too. That's a part of growth on the leadership team and the cabinet or board or whatever you have who makes those kinds of decisions is, yeah, why not put a little risk on your money and see what God does with it, you know? I like that. I like the attitude of this age is just temporary.
Yeah.
And this money is nothing but the value that it has to other people. You know, to God, it's just a resource to do what he wants to do. And money isn't going to stop him from doing anything.
No.
Well, anything else you wanted to add to this conversation this morning, Chuck?
Well, I was under the impression when I was practicing pastoring that I wouldn't ask anybody to do something I wouldn't be willing to do myself. And that, I think, goes a long way in encouraging people to do things, whatever it may be. People would come to me with ideas. Hey, we need to do this. Boy, you seem awful excited about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of ideas you got? Mm-hmm. Right? We'd have a conversation that would lead to them doing that ministry. If you've got an idea, you're probably the best person to handle it because somebody else starts it and they don't do it like you had it envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Yeah. Well, I think a part of that too is managing the expectations of when you're doing things with other people, it's not always going to be exactly how you thought it was going to be. So a lot of volunteer recruitment and getting people involved is allowing things to be done differently than what you thought.
Yep.
To some extent, obviously there is a direction and, you know, there are obviously some things that would be wrong or bad. You know, you shouldn't have a beer fest church outreach where everybody's getting drunk or something. You know, like if someone in charge of outreach, you're like, oh yeah, we're going to have an open cigar bar beer come to church day or something like that. And you're like, well, maybe that's not the best option. But
whiskey tasting.
But, you know, maybe you can say, I really, you know, appreciate your passion and wanting to reach out. Let's think about something else. You know, it's like, don't stop people from doing things. Help them do things. And if it's not exactly what you thought, is it acceptable enough to just let them run with it? It's kind of like, as a parent, you have to hand over responsibility to your kid at some point. And if you don't, you're just going to spend your whole life working for two people, you and someone else, you know? That you're just not sustainable. You're stunting yourself and you're stunting the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like really what it comes down to is good luck with God's power. Anything is possible.
There's no such thing as luck.
Yep.
Well, the other thing that I thought of too was training.
Yeah.
We want people to do things. You got to give them a little bit of an idea how it's going to work.
Right.
How it should work. What it should look like.
Yep.
And, so I started counseling classes with the people with the eye on some of these folks are going to be able to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can then turn help yet other people.
Right.
One of the foundations was that if you were talking with somebody, helping them, and you get into a situation that you don't think you can handle,
mm-hmm.
that's all right. Don't be afraid of that. You come to me and bring this person with you, and I'll see what I can do, and that way you can see how I would handle this situation.
Yep.
So you're getting training as well as helping this third individual.
Yep. Yeah.
So we had classes for Sunday school teaching, counseling, preaching. And so we had preaching classes. Well, you know, that means you're going to have to give them an opportunity.
Yep.
To do that. And so we were doing 3 services. 2 on Sunday morning, 1 Sunday night. And so I could handle 3 different preachers in the church on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a practicum in the preaching class.
Yeah.
You get to preach in front of a seasoned crowd of sermon yeah. hearers.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people who are encouraged to preach or teach are most worried about, is what do I have to offer someone who's been a Christian their whole life? Well, that's exactly what I run into every week, you know. I'm 26 years old. There are people who have been Christians longer than I've been alive. What do I have to offer them? Exactly the same thing they have to offer me. God's word.
That's it.
What he says. And I draw out of that different perspective and different meaning to me. You know, some things stand out to me that are, like, that's really obvious. You know, that's really powerful. That's exciting to me. But to someone else, they see it entirely differently. And it's all God's word. So what you bring to the table is exactly what God gave us. And that's what's been brought to the table for the last 4,000 years is exactly what God gave us. We're just helping each other understand it, each generation over and over and over and over again, so that we can get into a place with God where we're saved through Christ so that we can enter into the kingdom. So being involved, being a volunteer, is bigger than you. It's about saving as many people as possible for the kingdom of God.
Yep.
And if you look at it that way, you have this big mission, you have this big goal. It's easier to get on board instead of you just thinking, all I'm doing here is teaching kids for 45 minutes on a Sunday morning. No, you're bringing up the next generation of people who are going to lead people into the kingdom. You know, be tools for Christ.
Exactly. Exactly. So it seems to me most of my teaching career, I've always taught older people. In the youth group, we'd have Youth Sunday.
Yep.
Did you do that?
Yeah, we'd have Youth Sundays occasionally.
Well, I was the guy that was always taught, pointed to be the adult Sunday school teacher.
Mm.
Oh, man. So I learned early on, Paul saying to Timothy, don't let him despise your youth. Yep. I can handle that. I just use the scriptures to inspire them. And it's not me.
Just like Moses. But God, I don't talk very well. How can I go and talk to Pharaoh? Who made your tongue? Exactly.
I heard an explanation of that.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, that Moses grew up speaking Egyptian.
Okay.
Then he went off for how long was he in the desert?
40 years. Yeah.
You don't use a language
for 40 years. Yeah. You feel
can't get rusty.
Uh huh.
And they think that's what he was talking about. I got to talk to the Egyptians in Egyptian, and I'm a little rusty there, boss.
Doesn't matter to God.
No.
Yeah, I love when God says, who made your tongue? You don't think that I can get this to work? Or like when he's talking to Job and...
Oh, dear, yeah.
And he really lays into Job. He's like, where were you when the foundations of the earth were laid? Where... Do you make the sun rise every day? Do you tell where it's going to rain? Do you cause the land and sea to have borders? You know, like, where were you? What do you know? Who are you? Listen to me.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah. Well, that seems like a great place to end this episode. I hope that maybe in these words there was some encouragement to leaders to inspire and support. And we're all leaders in some way, keeping an eye out for each other. And looking to how we can encourage, and then also personally, we should be praying and seeking God's advice and spiritual direction for everything going on in the church.
Yep,
that's the starting place.
Not the second option.
Yep, that's where it starts.
Or if all else fails, the first choice.
First choice. Well, thank you for joining us on this episode of Breakfast Theology. We'd love to hear you. You can reach out to us at breakfasttheology@gmail.com.
If you want to start a ministry at North Kent, let Josiah know.
Yeah, come and talk to me. See you later.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.